listening to the only daily talk show in North America covering the world of football. This is World Football Daily.
Yes, 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 yes! It hits the back of the net! Oh my goodness me!
The world's game.
Oh, you're beautiful! What a head, son! What a head!
Our religion.
Brilliant goal! What an equalizer!
Our passion.
Go, go, USA! Oh, it's incredible! You could not write a script like this!
World Football Daily serves up the best football talk 5 days a week.
Oh! You will never, ever see a game quite like this! Unbelievable!
War of Words kicks off in the Champions League, but the instigator once again is Jose Mourinho, as the Chelsea manager says that this Barca side isn't as good as it used to be. Whose head is he trying to get into? It's a cracking night of action coming up. Manchester City, of course, taking on Barcelona, whereas elsewhere tonight in Germany, Bayer Leverkusen meet the almighty and all-conquering of French football, PSG. Will the Parisian giants finally be able to make this their Champions League to sing about as Zlatan looks to make up for missing out on the World Cup this summer? Welcome to World Football Daily, back again for Champions League football. I'm Oliver the Deuce Wilson, as always, bringing you the news and some of the views from around the world of football. Joining me later on, of course, is Rafa Gonzalez here to break down some of the Champions League action with us as well. Of course, is Mr. Paul McDonald of Goal.com. He'll be joining us in just a minute or two to talk about the big games coming up this evening. There's two huge games up tomorrow night as well. I'm still getting distracted by the Winter Olympics, I'm not going to lie. As we as we speak in the build-up to today's show, I've been doing a bit of prep and having a catch-up on the football news whilst obviously keeping the Winter Olympics like squarely on in the background. Is anybody else getting distracted? Did anybody else watch that Russia against USA ice hockey game over the weekend? That was fantastic. I actually even sent a couple of USA, USA texts to my friend who I knew she was watching it. In New York. Is it distracting you from the Champions League, or are you far too excited about the return of the knockout stages? We've got some great games coming up tonight. So let's just dive straight into it with the man who's on the line, ready and waiting to join us here on World Football Daily. One of our favourite guests to have on the show. I know all of our guests seem to be one of our favourite guests, but hey, we only bring on the people that we like here on World Football Daily, and we like this chap very much indeed. He's a great person to talk about all things European football because he is, of course, a master of it for Goal.com. Joining me here on WFD is the great Mr. Paul McDonald from Goal.com. Paul, a pleasure to have you back on, mate. It feels like it's been far too long since we had you on, man. How are you doing?
It has been too long, mate. In fact, I can't even remember the last time. But always a pleasure to be back on the show.
You're such a busy man these days. You know, you're running the show over at Goal. I don't think you've got time for people like us anymore, mate.
I've always got time for you guys, mate. that is until we're travelling to the World Cup this summer with a team of correspondents. So things are about to get seriously busy for us on Goal.com. But always time to chat Champions League with you guys.
I was going to say, always time to chat Champions League. Maybe if we ring you in the summer, you might be a little bit too busy running around Rio at the World Cup. But I'm sure we'll just be insanely jealous of you more than anything else, mate. That's for sure. It's a huge week of Champions League action. I mean, these games are arguably some of the pick of the knockout stages, although we have been blessed with some incredible ties throughout this opening knockout stage of the Champions League. I want to start off with PSG against Bayer Leverkusen, though, first, Paul, because almost build up the anticipation to that City-Barca game coming up tonight. Bayer losing on the weekend against Schalke. PSG, on the other hand, without Cavani, is that possibly a bonus for PSG going into this? It gives Zlatan less to think about, almost, and he can be that one-man show without Cavani being kind of on his side.
Yeah, the discussion of whether Cavani and Ibrahimovic can play together, just it doesn't seem to be going away. We explored it on Goal back in September when he was first put in the side, and I think even though he's beginning to score goals, and PSG overall haven't been as adversely affected by having both of them in the team, there does seem to be an element of we're trying to incorporate both players into the side rather than actually being a natural fit for formation. So I think you're right. It means that kind of Cavani and Ibra aren't fighting for the same spaces in the pitch. And Ibra continues to be in arguably the form of his career at the moment. I mean, I think from a neutral observer, I don't think many people would grudge Zlatan eventually getting his first Champions League title this season, because if anybody in the modern game deserves one, I think it's him. And I think his current form suggests that he's more desperate to win this title than he ever has been at any point of his career. So yes, I think the Cavani question has been answered for now. But when you've got Ibra in such good form, who needs anybody else?
And with Ibra, that determination not only coming from the fact that he is, you know, in peak form, arguably, as you say, Paul, but also the fact that, you know, missing out on this World Cup this summer, what a way to turn around to, say, somebody like Cristiano Ronaldo and say, fine, you can go to the World Cup, but I'm lifting Europe's biggest trophy come the end of this season as well. Do you think that's playing on the mind at all?
Yeah, I think he was absolutely devastated by that premature exit and not making is likely to be his last chance to take a bow at the World Cup. I think there's also the element that when you think about Ballon d'Or winners and World Cup years, you tend to base your thoughts on about the team that wins the World Cup. So, for example, I think a lot of people will be looking at what Neymar does during the summer, or potentially somebody from the Spain squad to emerge, or even someone like Mario Götze, if he were to have a fantastic World Cup, could be a potential Ballon d'Or winner next year. And of course, there's Lionel Messi if Argentina progressed really far. But if Zlatan Ibrahimovic were to continue this goal scoring form and power PSG all the way to the Champions League final and eventually win it, who's to say that Zlatan couldn't collect a Ballon d'Or next year, which would be again for the neutral an absolutely fantastic achievement.
I think there's many people that do believe that if it wasn't for, you know, Messi and Ronaldo, Zlatan would have easily won this year's one, although obviously Ribéry putting up a fantastic fight last season as well. For elsewhere, though, in this PSG side, it's not obviously all about Zlatan, and particularly in this week with what's happened to Lavezzi and his uncle and the horrific case of his uncle being murdered in Argentina. This is going to be an emotional night for the team, as particularly in Lavezzi. Do you think he plays this evening? Blanc's been very cautious about this, although he played on the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, Blanc will know better than anybody else where Lavezzi's head is at the moment. I mean, it's impossible to kind of gauge from afar what kind of emotions he's going through. Whenever incidents like this have happened in the past, it can galvanise not only a player but a side round about looking to dedicate something to the memory of someone who's been lost. And if that's the case, you might see PSG going from strength to strength and be unstoppable on all fronts. But likewise, as I say, it's impossible to second guess how he's feeling at the moment after such a horrific incident. And I just hope that he comes out of a stronger person and a stronger player.
On paper, everybody will be looking at PSG, but are there places in this PSG side that Leverkusen can manipulate? They do have some wonderful playmakers, including Son, who they picked up from Hamburg last year.
Yeah, I mean, Leverkusen are one of these sides where, if you look at the Bundesliga this season, if it wasn't for the complete and utter dominance of Bayern Munich, then Leverkusen would be considering themselves Bundesliga challengers. They've been, with them and Dortmund, obviously Dortmund's problems are well documented, but they have the best consistency out of any other side in the league. And as I say, if it wasn't for Bayern being absolutely unstoppable, then you'd be looking at a team that could really challenge to claim the title. So that they're absolutely no mugs. And I think that PSG would be well advised to avoid taking any context from that fixture that they played against Manchester United in the group stages where Man U completely dominated them and won at a canter. I think that match wasn't in any way representative of how good this Leverkusen team can be on their day. So I think PSG should be cautious and write off Leverkusen at their peril.
Is there any way to compare this Bayer Leverkusen side with the side that lost at Hampden Park against Real Madrid? It was a cracking sight back then of Oliver Neuville, Michael Ballack, etc. Does this Leverkusen side have that same intensity about it?
It's difficult to compare teams of a previous era. I mean, if you look at that team from 2002 that reached the final, they had players that went on to be stellar stars, the likes of Lucio, who went on to win the World Cup that summer, and had amazing players in midfield like Snyder, Bastuk, excellent footballers. I think this team is more of a collective rather than that one. I think that team, obviously Ballack as well, had a group of magnificent individuals. I think this team is better as a galvanised unit, but whether they've got the quality of the previous team, it's difficult to say.
There's been some talk just before we move on to City against Barca, Paul, of PSG getting involved in this legal suit in France surrounding Monaco and the money that was paid that allows Monaco to keep their headquarters in the Principality and therefore their foreign players not having to pay tax on their earnings. And I know Goal are very interested in this sort of thing at the moment, in players' earnings and whatnot. Do you think that PSG, is there just a kind of maybe sour grapes with this, that they can't do the same thing and attract even bigger and better players on higher salaries with tax-free earnings as well? Do you think this is why they're having the fight back, so to speak?
I think some of these clubs need to get real. I mean, if you look at the conversation that took place only last week between Pellegrini and Mourinho, when basically the two of them were bickering about who'd spent more hundreds of millions of pounds, when in fact both of them have spent fortunes across their career. And likewise, for PSG to try and criticise another organisation for kind of exploiting loopholes in order to maximise how much money they can spend on players and wages, the phrase pot calling the kettle black springs to mind there. and you're quite right when you mention what Goal are trying to do. I mean, we're looking at over the next couple of weeks, compiling a rich list of the 50 most wealthy players in the world. That's including wages, transfer fees earned, and also any kind of activities that they've got outside of the game. And we're also going to tie it into a debate of whether footballers are actually paid too much. Because when you think about it, footballers are in completely extravagant salaries at the moment, but in comparison to their American counterparts, they're still some way behind. If you look at some of the contracts that have been signed before in the NFL, in baseball and in basketball, the football contracts aren't there yet. They're some way behind. And I think footballers think that given how much more of a global sport football is in comparison to American sports, they're deserving of even more money. So whilst, if you look at the contracts at the moment, Rooney's about to sign a £300,000 a week deal, I think the contracts for major footballers are only going to go in one direction.
I do hope that this doesn't mean that we're going to be having advert breaks in the middle of football games. I know Major League Soccer does have different periods of time that are sponsored by, say, Chevrolet during a football match. I hope that we don't see that going across the board in football, that's for sure, and any part of advertising slowing the game down. But Paul, in all seriousness, I mean, you say overpaid, but at the same time, wouldn't you be, you'd be more than happy to take even half that amount of money, you know, 150 grand a week, and do a few hours of training a day and go and play an 11-a-side match on the weekend in its most basic form?
Absolutely. I completely agree. And I think Manchester United fans, if you take the Rooney example in particular, look at the fact that his weekly pay packet is about to go up from 250 to 300,000. And they must be thinking to themselves, yeah, I'd have been pretty happy with the 250,000, Wayne. Thanks very much. there wasn't really any need to push for another new contract. But I mean, I think when you find players get to a certain degree of wealth, I don't even include footballers in this, I include anybody with any kind of vast wealth. Once they're accustomed to spending that kind of money at that kind of rate, then it becomes difficult to go back to any modest kind of level of earnings. And the only way it seems to be for them is to get more and more and more money and try and increase their revenue as much as possible. And I think sometimes when I look at footballers, they have been burned by examples from previous generations of guys that didn't earn enough money in their playing career and end up working in bars and end up having to take on second jobs when their career is over in order to make ends meet. I mean, to give a personal example, my local team is Motherwell, and one of our greatest strikers in history was Willie Pettigrew, who remains one of our top goal scorers of all time, and he now works in Asda because he works as a shell stacker, and he has done for the last 20 years because any money that he made during his career, he didn't invest it in any way, and he's having to make ends meet by working in a kind of menial job at the end of his career. So I think footballers these days look at examples of that, and they're just trying to maximise their own revenue across their playing career so that when they actually do retire, they don't need to worry about money ever again.
But I suppose they also have a lot more advice available, learning from the experiences of people like Mr. Pettigrew. And of course, you've also got in this day and age, you know, agents, advisors, managers, they all take their 10%, but at the same time, they're also all there meant to be helping you. So is it almost a lot easier for players to at least have the knowledge there that they need to save and prepare because their career could be over in a heartbeat?
I think you're touching a very pertinent point there. If you look at to mention a rival documentary site's piece that they did on American footballers called Broke, it kind of investigated the kind of the turnover of players from the NFL that earn massive money at an extremely young age when players come out of college, and there's so many people dipping into that money across their career. But by the time they're done, like around 50% of them, 2 years after their careers are over, are declaring bankruptcy, because every single person wants a piece of that player whilst they're still making money. And the hangers on and the people that dip in and the kind of entourages that are around about these players, it hasn't really something that's impacted football as much yet. But the more that footballers become bankable stars, and the more that people see them as cash cows, essentially, that can pay their own way for the rest of their careers. And I think you're going to see that kind of element more and more in football, where players have earned massive, massive amounts of money, but because there is so many people advising them badly around about them, then their earnings are just frittered away.
Talking of massive amounts of money, because we should get back to the Champions League football as well, Paul. Manchester City, of course, most of those players are on immense amounts of money, but it's their first dip into the knockout stages of the Champions League against Barca, and a Barca side that Mourinho says is way past its best. Is this Mourinho putting pressure on Pellegrini, or having a pop at his old rivals from Los Blancos, or basically being able to enjoy having his cake and eating it as well, doing both?
Yeah, I think what Mourinho is doing at the moment is what he's done over his entire career. He's shifted the focus from his team onto himself, which he's an absolute master at. But I do think that if you look at Pellegrini and look at this Manchester City side, they have improved greatly from the one that played Bayern Munich and played so poorly against them in September when the Champions League returned. I think he as a coach was still trying to find his feet and still trying to find his best formation for that City team. And I think he's getting close to finding it. And I think even though people are kind of writing off Barcelona at the moment, saying this Barcelona team aren't as good as in previous years, this Barca team will still get 57 points in La Liga, or is it 60 now actually? And they're still absolutely flying. So that there'll be an extremely difficult side to break down. And I think that we could be in for a classic match tonight.
Is there a case that, you know, if Puyol partners, Piqué Puyol is the elder statesman, may not have the legs to cope with City, similar to Xavi and Iniesta, have these players been rested enough, been given the time to get themselves ready and recharged for this sort of game, that Barcelona, the old legs in that side, will be able to cope with the maybe rawer, slightly younger and more energetic City that could come out tonight?
Well, Martino has enjoyed rotating his Barca team this season and has managed to give rest to a number of his main players. So I don't think there's fitness issues at this stage of the season for guys like Xavi, even though he's 34 now. At the back, however, I do agree that there is an issue there. I think that it's more likely that Mascherano will play alongside Piqué. But again, Mascherano has had a series of dodgy moments this season. He remains rash in the challenge. He remains a guy who looks uncomfortable and have a tendency to drift out of position. And not only that, I mean, the relationship between Puyol and Piqué was so strong was because Puyol kept his eye on Piqué and made sure that his concentration didn't break across 90 minutes. And now Piqué doesn't have his partner with him for any kind of stretch of the season. You're noticing Piqué making more mistakes, and you're noticing Piqué kind of drift in and out of where he should be on the pitch, and it's allowing other teams to create chances against him. So I think that the kind of real area where this first time maybe won and lost is how well Barcelona defend as a unit, particularly with Busquets in front of them, because that's going to be a really key area. And I think it's going to be really, really important that Piqué and Mascherano keep their concentration for 100% of the match, because as you noted with David Luiz at the weekend in the cup tie between Man City and Chelsea, if you turn off for a second, Manchester City can get in behind you and wreak havoc.
But at the same time, with Barca going forward, there's the ability for Demichelis and company to get tied up with Messi, Sanchez and Pedro to take up the fullbacks. Then you've got Alves and Alba coming flying forward, these fullbacks that love to get back and press on the opposition's defence. For Nasri and Silva, that's going to be a big part of their game, do you think, Paul, to get back and provide defensive support, something that maybe neither of them are too used to?
Yeah, that's going to be a really interesting area of the match as well, because, I mean, while City City do a Chelsea, as it were, and kind of allow Silva and Nadri to sit further up the pitch, so that when they do get the chance to counter attack, they've got a numerical advantage in the opposition area of the pitch? Or will Silva and Nadri be pushed back and be forced to be disciplined and track the runners for 90 minutes? Or will Pellegrini indeed decide to go with a more defensive option, maybe play Kolarov in midfield instead of Silva, and try and combat Alves' runs down the right flank by playing two defenders on that side? It's difficult to second guess at the moment, because both squads have got so many options in them that it's difficult to kind of identify who's going to play where. But if I was to take a guess at how Barcelona might line up, I think they might go with Cesc up top as one of the top three, and maybe sacrifice Sanchez purely for possession purposes, so that Cesc can slot in to midfield with alongside Xavi and Iniesta, and just play keep ball when Barcelona have territorial advantage. Because that was one thing that Bayern did very well earlier in the season, was they pushed City back into their own half and just kept the ball for long, long spells. And City didn't really know how to combat that, because teams generally come into the Emirates don't have the ball for a great period of time. It's usually City that are forced to make the play. So I think Barcelona might look to go and just keep the ball for the first 25 minutes, half an hour, and play kind of possession football in City's half, and then look to hit them in behind whenever they get the opportunity.
Almost sounds a bit like the rope-a-dope technique. You know, City will come out energetic, looking to get something at home, and Barca will just try and kill them with moving the ball around nice and comfortably. Paul, you reckon we're going to be in for a cracker tonight, so I'm going to have to ask you for a score prediction as well for this evening.
Oh, put me on the spot.
Oh, yeah.
I think actually Manchester City will win tonight. I think they'll take a lead back to Camp Nou, but I think Barcelona will get through over the two legs. I think Barcelona will get a goal tonight. I can't see them not scoring. I think this is a case where both defences have questions to answer. And I think that if Messi is anyway on form, I can't see him coming out of the match without at least laying on an assist or getting a goal. But I do think that given the kind of, given the crowd will be 100% behind City, it's a new experience for them, the Champions League knockout stages. I think that the crowd and the kind of the talent that's on show will be enough to get them a marginal victory on the night.
And I presume you're going to give PSG the nod against Bayer Leverkusen, or is this going to be tighter than some people think?
I think it might be tighter than people think. I think PSG tend to play better when they're up against really big opposition, as they've shown against Barcelona last season, where they arguably should have put them out. But I think PSG will just manage to make it through the tie.
Paul, you're an absolute star for joining us here on a Champions League Tuesday. There's some great ties coming up tomorrow night as well. We don't have time to run through all of that with you, I'm afraid, today, because we have used up over 20 minutes of your day today, and far too long indeed. So we'll let you get back to the news desk at goal.com, and we look forward to seeing your coverage of the Champions League coming on our websites this week, mate. Thank you so much for joining us.
No problem, anytime.
Cheers, Paul. Take care, mate, and have a very good day indeed. Big thanks there to Paul McDonald for joining us here on World Football Daily. A very good man, Paul, and always great when he can take a little bit of time out to join us here, breaking down some of the build-up to tonight's big Champions League games. Manchester City, as you already know, and as we keep repeating on this show, taking on Barcelona tonight, and Bayer Leverkusen taking on Paris Saint-Germain. Joining me for the final wrap of the show is, of course, Rafa Gonzalez. Raf, big man, how are we on Tuesday today? Excited, I'm sure, for the return of the Champions League tonight.
Oh, yeah. I had trouble sleeping last night just because I was so damn excited about the Champions League.
You really, you genuinely do have like this Champions League excitement going on, don't you? Like,
I do. Yeah, actually, I do. I mean, I am really excited. I have been kind of for like the past couple of weeks really been looking forward to some Champions League play. And I mean, it's here, you know, like all the websites today, they all have Champions League themed kind of stories. There's massive debates going on. I love the fact that the Man City Barcelona game is really it's up in the air, you know, like people are really kind of taking sides, and it's not so much the case where, you know, maybe last season even Barcelona would have just been complete favorites. For me now, I think it's really quite even, and I'm probably getting my hopes up too much, Juice. You know what I mean? I think a lot of people are expecting a classic match from this tie, but I'm not sure. I could also see it being just one of those really heavyweight bouts that kind of go, you know, 0-0 in the first leg and 1-0 in the second leg, to where, you know, both teams just filled with such tremendous quality and talent on the fields that they basically count each other out. You know,
but like that's game over for City, surely, if it's 0-0 after the first leg, right?
Yeah. I mean, you got to think that, because being at home, they should be trying to. They can't be held to a clean sheet. Basically, they need to get their scoring boots on at home. And then put the pressure, really kind of tighten those screws and put the pressure on Barcelona when they go back to the Camp Nou in 2 weeks' time.
This is one common feature of this tie, is that, you know, if it was in the Camp Nou first and City were going there, you know, people would say, well, tonight's the start of this leg for City, really, of this round, this knockout round against Barca. You know, if they were going to the Camp Nou, it'd be like, let's see what they can do. If they can hold their own, then they've got a great chance of going back to the Etihad and doing it. The fact that it's at the Etihad tonight, it puts so much more pressure for City. This is more like a single game FA Cup final. If they can come out flying and go to the Nou Camp with a 2-goal advantage or something like that, then they have got a huge chance of getting past Barca. Level terms or trailing Barca going back to the Camp Nou makes it, from what everybody seems to be saying, you know, a very different story, makes it a completely different ball game for City to go into, because Barca are so good at home in the Champions League, as Jonathan Liu mentioned as well yesterday. You know, away from home not so much, but at home so good in the Champions League. Whereas City, you know, this is their home. This is the place where they have been strongest by a mile, hands down, this season, and this is their chance to really press Barca and to shift them into a corner, like Milan did last year, like PSG have done as well in the past. This is their chance to really kind of put Barca in an awkward position, which means that they have to come out and play at the Camp Nou, and they can't just tiki taka pass their way around on that massive pitch in Barca and frustrate City with their possession play. Instead, it's going to be City will be on the onus tonight to really push on, and it will be interesting to see just how aggressive they get. No Aguero confirmed today. Fernandinho will be fit. I imagine he'll be playing a huge part in that midfield. We spoke about with Paul McDonald. Let's talk about some of the battles and some of the keys to City winning. Because for me, Rafa, one of the big keys is to do what so many teams say that they need to do when they take on Barca, and that is to close down the back four when Victor Valdez has the ball.
Mm-hmm.
That's a massive thing for me today. When you take into account the height that Touré, Fernandinho, Kompany, De Michelis all have in that spine of the pitch from kind of midfield back, long balls from Valdez down the centre of the pitch should be mopped up. You know, Messi's not a tall guy. Pedro and Sanchez aren't the biggest guys in the world. Prefer the ball at their feet. Same with Xavi. Iniesta, you know, has a decent leap on him, but again, prefers the ball at his feet. If City can have the goal to press from the very front, and that's going to mean a lot of work for Negredo, for Jovetic, for Silva, and for Nasri as well. And it'll be interesting to see which Sami Nasri turns up, because he's been in great form recently, but also has that you know, laziness, that what we've seen in the French team, that arrogance, that feistiness in a negative way that can really hinder his play and take him out of games just by his own attitude more than anything else. And I think closing down that back four, you know, if it is going to be Alves, Puyol, Piqué and Alba as expected by many, I think stopping them from passing out the back in that style that Barca is so comfortable with, so used to doing, I think is number one, point number one for City in terms of being able to get a result against Barca at the Etihad tonight.
I thought that you were going to say the main key for Manchester City would be if Zabaleta truly can convince Leo Messi to sign for the Citizens by just taking him out for a night on town and fish and chips, because that was one of the stories that I read this morning. And I mean, I find that quite interesting and quite funny, just because, I mean, I know that we talked about it like maybe a month ago, 2 months ago, with Leo Messi kind of being a little bit out of it kind of losing that passion or whatever.
It was back in December, January time, wasn't it? Early January, yeah. When there was the talk of Zlatan saying Messi should come to PSG and all this kind of stuff, wasn't it? And and we were very kind of, really? I don't see Messi leaving Barca. And well, we spoke
fact
to
of the matter is he looks perfectly happy right now. I mean, he was scoring goals. He was being, like I said, scored 2 goals, made 2 assists at the weekend. You can't ask for much more from your striker. I mean, if he can kind of... The other thing that I also want to talk about, and I know that you've probably talked about this already with Paul McDonald, but the whole scoring drought on English soil, just absolutely ridiculous. I mean, as long as they play their game, I do think that they will be able to frustrate Man City. I completely agree with you, Juice, that if they can put pressure on that Barcelona back line, it's a completely different game. And they have the power and the size really to kind of really put their influence on the game if Manchester City really wants. I think that Manuel Pellegrini is also the kind of manager who will have pretty much drawn up the perfect game plan, and it's really just going to be a matter of who gets, I don't know, the luck of the draw, what ball bounces right for whoever it is. Because at this point, Juice, again, for me, it's simply a matter of just two of the top teams in the world. It's very, very likely that one of these teams will make it to the final, in my opinion. And the other side being Bayern Munich, from what I see. And I may be a little bit early to say that, Juice, but I'm just so damn excited for this. I cannot wait for it to go. I'm practically through talking about it. I just want to sit in front of the TV and watch all the football that I can watch right now and play on repeat.
Barca's kind of poor record on English soil will come into their heads tonight at all? I mean, it's a different Barca playing style, mm-hmm. slightly to what we've seen under Pep and what we saw under
Pep Guardiola.
I said Pep, it's the Tito. There we go. Tito Villanova. Tito, it was on the tip of my tongue there. There we go. under Tito Villanova. With Tata Martino. I mean, people aren't maybe too happy still with Tata Martino as well. That's some of the talk coming out of Spain in the last few days or so. Apparently, Barca officials aren't 100% convinced that he might be the man to lead this Barca side after the next year or so. But it is a different style of play. It's slower than it has been. Mm-hmm. I just wonder if maybe that slightly more patient, methodical style, even slower than it has been, might be better at breaking down somebody like City, because it's not going to get the tempo up. City will want Barca to almost be playing quick, because you know, when we see City take up their tempo is when they play their best football, really, in the Premier League. You know, when Yaya picks up the ball and starts charging forward, when Silva and Nasri get on the move, when balls are being flung in towards Negredo. Sure. And in fact, possibly for me, slowing that tempo down slightly for Barca tonight might be beneficial in just, you know, it makes it slightly easier to play that keep ball. Mm-hmm. B, if Barca are able to keep the ball at a slower pace, yet City are kind of rushing around quite a bit, you know, with that excitement, with that energy, with the intensity of the contest, made them trying to close down Barca quickly. And if Barca can weather that kind of early 15-minute storm, if that's how this game starts off, then that's going to be a really big deal, I think, in terms of frustrating City. Just being nice and patient and slow, I think, could be a big help. And having this game in the first leg as well, they've got the security, sure, of going back to the Camp Nou and being able to go, well, all right, then, you know, maybe we don't get the job done in England, but we can still go back to the Camp Nou and finish this off again, which is why it makes City so kind of important to go out there and have a smashing start to the game and to ensure that they come away with a win tonight as well. I just wonder if the speed of Barca might actually be beneficial on English soil tonight,
sure,
as they take on City.
Yeah, the two players I think that you really kind of need to see shine for City tonight, one being Colo Torre, in the midfield for City, because One, he is just an absolute beast of a midfielder. He covers so much ground. He's such a big player. His strides are so ginormous that he just makes up ground quickly. And he's physical. He's very physical. He's able to kind of body out players and gain possession in a very, very kind of crowded, congested, not congested and crowded, but a midfield that's not going to allow for very much time on the ball, basically, is what I'm trying to say. And he's shown that he can do that with flying colors in the Premier League. But to do it against Barcelona is going to be another thing. If he can, I think it's going to go a hell of a long ways just for Man City. He is the ultimate kind of tipping point for me for Man City. The other player, though, to really watch out for me is also Vincent Kompany, primarily because he's going to have to pick up slack. He's going to have to make sure that he's got his players playing with their heads, primarily, first and foremost, not being stupid, nothing irresponsible, basically. You can't make irresponsible plays against a Barcelona side because they will absolutely put you to the sword on any mistake, especially on big nights like this.
Would you have Kompany, say, man-marking Messi in the centre of the pitch and leave Zabaleta and Clichy to cover Pedro and Sanchez? Pedro, who's arguably the bigger threat for Barca than Sanchez tonight in the form that he's in and the quality that we've seen over the last few, last season or so with Pedro. I think he's been fantastic with Barca. But Zabaleta, of course, by far the strongest defender on those flanks for City and arguably one of the best fullbacks, best right backs in the world right now. It'd be an interesting battle between Zabaleta and Pedro. So if you have Clichy covering Sanchez, Zabaleta covering Pedro, and Kompany man marking Messi, it means then you've got Di Michaelis to maybe cover that space, you know, to hold off the advances of Xavi or Iniesta coming down the centre. You've got to take into account as well, though, the overlapping play of Alba and Alves that obviously love to get forward. It's going to be a big night for Silva and Nasri getting back and supporting on the defensive. I know Zabaleta and Clichy both like to push forward as well, but I just think that Nasri and Silva are going to have to do a lot of backtracking as well to support their side. I think you're right with Kompany is going to be a big player tonight, big player for City, of whether he can anchor the heart of that defence. And Joe Hart as well. I mean, we haven't had to speak about Joe Hart and the nerves and the shakiness in goal because he's been, you know, very solid in, since his return back into the starting lineup at City. But you just wonder on big nights in the Champions League, you know, Hart has gone missing on occasion. And you wonder, tonight's a big kind of a question for him as well in terms of his form and in terms of how he can handle the big night tonight. But then you've also got the question of, you know, Xavi, Iniesta, do they have the legs like they used to tear people apart? They've got the vision and the space, but are their legs maybe getting a little tired in terms of being able to push forward and support the attacks like they can? Alves and Alba, you know, they love to push on, but is that going to leave too much space in behind for Piqué and Puyol, who haven't played as much together as maybe they would have liked to have done in the past? They're two very experienced defenders and have a great chemistry together, but again, Puyol's old legs taking on, say, somebody like Jovetic, who's got the slightly younger youthful exuberance, and Negredo's ability to bully and physically manhandle his way through Puyol and Piqué will be very interesting, I think, to see how those kind of play out, I think, over tonight and the next few legs as well. I'm really looking forward to this is by far the pick of the ties, but I don't want to say that PSG isn't an interesting game either against Bayer Leverkusen, and this is a PSG side that you mentioned that Barca or City could easily be one of the two sides that meets possibly Bayern Munich in the final this year. I think people are overlooking Paris Saint-Germain far too easily this season. I would be petrified of playing against PSG in the Champions League. They are so strong in terms of depth, in terms of quality. I mean, an incredible story coming out from PSG at the moment. Obviously, the horrific death of Lavezzi's uncle back in Argentina, murdered, and Lavezzi going out this weekend and scoring, and Blanc saying that he could still be included in this week's Champions League games as well. And I'm not saying that it's a positive thing in any way, shape or form, but you know when there's that mental kind of tipping point, that thing that can, you know, you see it when a player goes through tragedy off the pitch, sometimes they come back and on the pitch they are just intense and unstoppable. And you wonder if that could be something for Lavezzi going into this midweek game against Leverkusen, you know, away from home. It's not going to be an easy place to go to get a result away from home, especially a PSG side that still, you know, isn't the most experienced when it comes to Champions League, although they nearly put Barca out last season, of course. And I think this PSG side could potentially just run rampant with that inspiration from Lavezzi. If it's anything like we saw on the weekend, he was brilliant. Yes, there's no Cavani, but that almost helps Ibrahimovic in terms of he doesn't have to worry about, you know, the two-man star show at PSG taking over tonight. You know, it's just him. He is the big dog. And you've got Motto, who's been excellent. Matuidi, who's been fantastic this season. Verratti's coming back into form. Moura, obviously, supporting the attack as well. This PSG side is going to go places. And if they haven't won a Champions League in the next 2 years, I will be very surprised indeed. I think this year could very much be their year. And I just wonder if Leverkusen have got enough to hold out at home. I think going to Paris with a draw for Leverkusen will be fantastic in terms of trying to nick an away goal and take it on the road if they can just hold out for a 0-0 tonight.
I mean, that is, look, I think Sami Hyypiä and Bayer Leverkusen are probably hoping that PSG are slightly overlooking them, because that's really their biggest hope at this point. And like you said, overlooking them enough to where they're completely distracted in the first leg in Germany. Really, I mean, if they can score a late goal to where, you know, they don't kind of awaken that sleeping giant that is Zlatan Ibrahimovic and really get them motivated, that is their biggest hope at this point. For me, this game, I mean, I'm more excited about watching this game simply for the highlights at this point. I just want to see what Zlatan's going to do, because I do think that he is, like you said, just supremely motivated. He has nothing else to play for, Juice. He's not going to the World Cup this summer. This is his biggest stage at this point in time. So for me, I do see them going out in the next round to whoever they play with regards to Barcelona or Manchester City, but only because, well, one, Manchester City probably have just as much of a payroll as they do and talent as they do, probably a little bit more talented and a little bit more depth in the Manchester City squad for me, and then Barcelona just have the experience over PSG at this point. I know that they came close last season. I don't see that happening. Next season, yeah, but I think this is probably PSG's best season to try to get this Champions League trophy, primarily because Zlatan's got nothing else to do. Maybe you're right. Maybe next year they could win it, just because there won't be maybe there'll be like a World Cup lag or a...
I don't see how you're saying that that PSG aren't a side that are going to be up there and thereabouts consistently for the next few years.
They will be. They'll be perennial quarterfinalists, maybe even semifinalists. But
this is a semi-final team with the money and the investment that they've got. This is a Zlatan this year who wants to make a big name, because obviously missed out on the World Cup. Finishing up with the Champions League trophy in his arms would be quite a nice way to kind of say to Cristiano Ronaldo, hey, you can take Portugal to the World Cup. That's okay, because you ain't going to win that and I've won this. And I do think as well that this PSG side, you know, will have learnt what it learnt against Barca last season. And with it not being as strong a Barca side that's not playing as great a football as they have done in years gone by. And, you know, I really don't... I've said this for, you know, the last 2 years now. This Barca side isn't what it was kind of back in 2009 or so. In no way near what it was. And I think PSG, on the other hand, the side almost going in the other direction, they are very much on the wax and on the wane. This is a PSG side that I think could potentially embarrass a side like Barca with the quality that they've got in it.
I think
again, that's something that could arise for City tonight. You know, there is a distinct possibility that City go out, grab the ball by the horns and absolutely batter Barca tonight at home. You know, the only thing is there maybe that self-confidence and belief in Champions League football for City, is that really there in the same way that PSG have it? Because obviously PSG have done extremely well over the last season with Champions League football. On the other hand, Manchester City have struggled in their last 2 years, you know, not getting out of the group stages. However much you put them in the group of death, that still doesn't, you know, shine a great light on their Champions League performances. So I think that City, if they can have the confidence in themselves to play the best football that they can, they could batter Barca tonight, possibly. At the same time, I do think PSG would probably beat City or at least give them a very good run for their money, and I think PSG would do Barca. I don't know how you can think that PSG will get past Leverkusen comfortably. I mean, Bayer Leverkusen, they've won two in their last six. Lost on the weekend to Schalke. I saw some of that game. Lovely finish by Goretzka and Jan-Klaus Huntelaar by providing the two goals for Schalke.
Yeah, welcome back to Jan-Klaas, by the way. Welcome back.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
I know he's been back for a couple of games. He scored a goal in his opening game back from injury. But, yeah, welcome back to him. Hey, real quick, speaking of PSG, What do you make of the distraction that is Ronaldo saying he'd be happy to fill in for the vacant sporting director job at Paris Saint-Germain?
I don't know if there's anything really in that in any way, shape, or form.
It's just Ronaldo kind of coming out and one of the reporters kind of saying, "Hey, Ronaldo. So this is going on, and there's a lot of money there. What are your chances?" And he's like, "Yeah, sure, I'll take it. I mean, who wouldn't, right?" I mean, if you're going to ask me if I'm interested in the sporting director job at PSG, I'm going to say, F yeah, man. I'll take that job any day, all day. I don't care. Pay me a salary. Pay me the minimum salary that you think would be worthy of a sporting director job. I will pick up my family and move out of my house, take my kids across the ocean, live in Paris for however, you know, 5-6 months until I fail dramatically. And they fire me and send me off with a nice, pension or whatever. That would just be absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. Okay. So, Raph, we obviously know that you are a football working whore, in that you will
take
any well paying job.
Call me that all day, every day.
Yeah, because you'll have the money to pay for it, I guess. the legal suit against me. What do you make though of the strong rumours that David Beckham actually wants to bring Cristiano Ronaldo to Miami to make him his kind of landmark first signing? Do you genuinely think, you know, Beckham and Ronaldo, you know, they're pally, they're good mates, and do you think that Beckham could lure Ronaldo to Miami? You know, the talk of the money, you know,
not anytime soon, and I guess he does have time to kind of make those moves happen, but why would Ronaldo, one of the best players in the world, leave the main spotlight of Europe?
Miami franchise is going to be a couple of years down the road. So what if Ronaldo won a Champions League and another Ballon d'Or?
No, I think he's still too young. Until Ronaldo's in his late 30s or after 35 or something, I don't know. Only then would he maybe consider MLS as an option for his post-career kind of wind down, you know, and looking for other business options. At this point, Juice, there's a lot of things that are coming out of Beckham's, you know, mouth and Miami FC that are a little fantastical, a little too fantastical, even for me. I think he's also in for a little bit of a rude awakening when it comes to like the actual business side of things. And I'm sure he's got plenty of handlers and stuff that take care of these things. But he's going to have to start being aware of what he's saying, because, you know, there was a lot of talk of, oh, we're going to be building on the harbor right next to, you know, the Miami Harbor, so we can take in all the tourists that come in off the cruise ships and stuff. And as of recently, I guess, you know, the Miami Harbor was like, no, that's not going to happen. There's no chance of that happening. I don't know where you're getting this. And so, I mean, like, there's just there's a lot that they're saying, Juice. I mean, I think he's even talked about bringing over, who was it, Claudio Ranieri or something like that. I mean, it's look. I love the talk, and I appreciate it, and it's great that a team in MLS who isn't even a team yet is generating buzz and rumors around the world. But as long as it's not making us a laughing stock, that's all that I care about. And at this point, we are kind of teetering on that edge of of whether or not we're just a sideshow, basically, and a tabloid kind of story. And I don't want it to be just a tabloid story. I want us to have an impact. I want us to bring viable attention, real attention to our players and those people who have been working hard, those people who have put in the years here at MLS for the past like 20 years. There is a great foundation here at MLS, and I don't want the juggernaut that is David Beckham and company to crack our foundations and shatter whatever we have going on.
Do you think he's going to have a bit of a, you mentioned kind of an eye-opening experience in terms of dealing with this new franchise and talking the talk and then actually being able to walk the walk after talking. Do you think he's going to have a bit of an eye-opening experience when he realises how difficult it is to bring big world-class talent to the US as well? I mean, you talk about you don't think Ronaldo would be able to come, and you look at some of the players that have come. I mean, the biggest name has been David Beckham. You know, Robbie Keane is a huge name in America, but he's not a superstar in... He was never really a big superstar in England. You know, he played for Tottenham, did well, Wolves, Aston Villa, etc. But at the same time, it wouldn't have been... If you were thinking, you know, top 10 players in Europe at that time, you wouldn't have thought Robbie Keane. Similarly, you know, Defoe, a player out of favour at Tottenham. You look at Dempsey, who was struggling at Spurs, and it's easier for him to be the American returning. You know, Bradley, we spoke about how surprised we were about that one, but again, the American returning is a much more bigger pull than really being the European going across to America for the money. So do you think he's going to have a real kind of shock value if he starts, if these sorts of names start getting kind of tossed about a bit in the press, sources from Miami and Major League Soccer looking at this sort of deal, and then he realises that actually, you know, the highest kind of ranking player he could probably bring in is a Tim Cahill type player, you know, but the equivalent of, say, bringing in Stephen Pienaar or Leon Osman now from Everton, you know, he's not going to be able to bring in those sorts of, he won't be able to bring in a Benteke, a Lukaku, a Ronaldo, a Huntelaar, anybody like that. He wouldn't be able to bring in that top quality or even second to top quality level player into Major League Soccer. And do you think that could be really damaging as well for Beckham if starting this franchise? Because if he starts saying, I want this, this and this, and the pull of Beckham and the money isn't enough to get players across, then that looks really bad on Bex and in this Miami franchise straight from the get-go. You know, if people in Miami start thinking we're going to be getting people like Ronaldo, and then, you know, Sebastian Ronaldo turns up, the Crawley striker or something like that, you know, hot prospect. Sure. People in Miami, we know they're notoriously fickle with their franchises. Do they start then turning their nose up and saying, well, you know, we thought Beckham and Ronaldo.
Absolutely.
And we get all these guys and now we've only got, you know, Jimmy Nobody or that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think that is the case, or I think that will happen. I think that, you know, he will be kind of, if he is kind of walking around thinking that he can bring in whoever he wants and I've got friends in high places, he might be kind of shocked as to what the response will be. At the same time, Juice, let's not deny the fact that David Beckham, his name, his brand, is capable of doing some pretty damn incredible things. And what I mean by that is, it would be, I wouldn't put it past David to be able to bring in some really kind of, you know, some unmined resources that maybe haven't been looked at or tapped into yet. Some players who, you know, maybe aren't necessarily the biggest prospects in the world or playing at the biggest clubs in the world right now, but he could still bring in somebody who is just supremely talented and could really make an impact. And he could start building a new, he could start bringing in players that potentially go from Miami and are exported to bigger leagues around the world. And that in itself could bring a lot of attention.
But why would,
to MLS.
Why would Beck?
Why? Because that would be, I mean, he now becomes a builder and he becomes somebody who, you know, it's not about, oh, look at my friends and my connections and look at who I could bring in to play. Who are also winding their careers down. He could become somebody who really takes this league and builds it up even further. And that's something that I'm really hoping for. I'm hoping that he finds somebody from, you know, the David Beckham Academy in the States, or somebody from South America who, you know, who is lighting it up in, you know, maybe in Liga MX or something like that, and is a big Mexican star, and comes over to play in the United States, plays for Miami, plays in a Spanish speaking city. I know it's not, you know what I mean. And then that kind of, you know, maybe he lights it up for a year or two and gets a fantastic contract elsewhere. And all of a sudden, Miami FC is linked to, you know, Manchester City, PSG, all Real Madrid even. I mean, think about how powerful it would be if he could pick up a Mexican or a South American player, bring him into Miami FC, have him light it up for a year or two, and then move him on to a Real Madrid. Suddenly, you're getting American fans kind of really – really excited about, well, what's next? You know, what else can he do? What else, you know, we're watching this player now playing at the highest level in Europe. You know, this is great stuff. There's a lot of promise coming from Major League Soccer. And it's not so much an importing league of old and retiring talents. It becomes a feeder league, sure, but a league that really kind of is a great stepping stone to the bigger leagues. And once you have teams like that in this league, then you can really start becoming a bigger league as a whole. And more team or more players will be like, well, I mean, if they are having that capability, maybe I do want to go play in Major League Soccer. Maybe I do want to go to the United States.
Don't think that's a route that you can go down in Miami and with Major League Soccer. I love the idea of, you know, Beckham turning that into a, you know, a great place for young players to build, grow their talent and play football. But I don't see Beckham taking that route of, say, bringing in experienced coaches over big-name players. I think they'll always want to bring in big-name players to keep that Miami market happy. You know, they'll need to succeed, and long-term prospect, long-term kind of plans like that won't succeed immediately, which is what they'll need to embed themselves in that Miami market, in that Florida market. So as much as it seems, you know, like a great idea, that to me just won't take shape in any way, shape or form. Raf, I cannot see that happening. I can only see that they'll do what everybody else has done in terms of they will try and bring in a big name player because they'll be a franchise with a fair amount of money to spend. They'll try and bring in a name brand. They will go for the immediate success, and then they will actively continue to talk about kind of bringing in, you know, quality youngsters and growing talent through the academies and whatnot, as everybody else is doing. And I think that's just the way Major League Soccer is built. And I think if you're going to succeed in somewhere like Florida, Miami, that's the way that you're going to have to do it, unfortunately, because it's got to be hit the ground running for Beckham and co. down in Miami, man. And as much as I hope that you're right, I don't think we're going to see it take place that way.
Fine, just shatter all my dreams, Juice.
I will.
And send me off to the Champions League, just downtrodden and beaten.
Well, that's what I'm here to do. I'm here to shatter your dreams and make you miserable. We'll run through a quick last few.
I like it. Don't worry. It makes me feel good inside. I mean, I feel like I've stirred you up. The sleeping giant that is not Zlatan Ibrahimovic, but that is the Juice Wilson. Gosh, it makes me feel so special.
Giant, maybe portly, I think is what you're thinking there. Let's run through some of the other news quickly that's coming out for World Football today. Lewis Holtby saying it. He is fine with his old manager Felix Magath coming into Fulham despite enduring a frustrating spell under Felix Magath earlier on in his career. Holtby didn't enjoy it, that's for sure, playing under Magath the first time that they did. And I do think that it almost highlights exactly what I was talking about yesterday. You know, Holtby says he's fine, but he's not pleased by it, let's put it that way. So sure. In Liga, PSG in action tonight, but they may be a little bit sidetracked, at least off the pitch, as the club gets set to sue the LFP, taking a hearing to court after Monaco revealed they would pay €50 million to the French League Football Federation as part of a deal that would guarantee Monaco's participation in the championship this year while keeping their headquarters in the Principality. Of course, Monaco able to play their foreign stars without them incurring taxes, French taxes, and that's been a big talking point in French football. PSG, along with seven other other clubs from French football, including Bordeaux, Cannes, Lille, Lorient, Marseille, Montpellier, have decided to take common legal action against the move that allows Monaco to...
I applaud you for naming those clubs, because I thought you were just going to say seven other clubs, because really, who else matters in Ligue 1?
Hey, come on, you know, Montpellier, hey, okay. Former champions, Marseille, still Marseille? A big side.
Yeah, no, I mean, hey, it's brilliant stuff.
But it's I like how you throw it. Yeah, Bordeaux too. I mean, you know, they exist.
I hear they make good wine.
but Monaco still able to allow their foreign players to not pay taxes on their wages, and a big disagreement still continuing through that. These seven clubs taking legal action against this decision. Monaco are very upset and shocked by this. I'm not too upset if I'm everybody else in. I'm not too shocked, sorry, if I'm at Monaco, that these clubs are taking legal action against the way that Monaco have been able to almost buy their way out of paying taxes, or their players having to pay taxes, which allows them then to bring in bigger and better foreign imports into the side. If I was PSG, Bordeaux, Cannes, Lille, Lorient, Olympique Marseille and Montpellier, Cannes, by the way, in Ligue 2, even Ligue 2 getting arsy about this, I would be immediately, along with everybody else, I would be on the phone saying this is complete bull. Like, how can you let Monaco get away with this? They're obviously able to attract star players and pay them excessive wages in order to allow them to, and you've basically accepted a £50 million kind of payoff for this. I'd be absolutely livid if I was in French football right now and a French football owner, and rightfully so. Public, they're going to take this to the administrative court, the state council, this lawsuit against Monaco, which would be very interesting indeed. Laurent Blanc has said that he will possibly have Lavezzi in his side going into tonight. And the big news from Spain is that Raul Garcia, the Atletico Madrid midfielder, has signed a new 3-year deal with Atletico. Garcia, who was attracting attention from the likes of Manchester United, looks set to be staying in the Spanish capital for a little bit longer.
All that means, Juice, again, it's just a glorified signature. So all that means is it's going to cost a little bit more money to prime away from Atletico Madrid at this point.
Yeah, yeah. It's a shame that that's exactly what it means, unfortunately, ref. Hey, you talk about killing dreams, all right? That's a big downer to put on that one. Thank you very much.
Well, the same thing goes for Messi. I think I read like last week or the week before that, you know, one of the directors at Barcelona, the new directors or owners or presidents or whatever, he's come out and said, yes, yeah, actually, we are going to offer Leo Messi a new contract, and he should expect to be paid, you know, top dollar, because he is one of the best, or he is the best in the world, and since he is the best in the world, he should expect to be paid as such. Now, that's all great and good, but that just means it's, you know, they've also kind of covered their butts a little bit in terms of, well, now if you want Messi, you're going to have to really kind of ramp up those offers, and you know, this, you're going to have to really kind of take care of our legal suits and battles over the Neymar transfer, because there's no chance we're going to be giving up this talent. That's how that goes. I mean, again, glorified signatures, man.
So if you were to be lured to a club, you touched on Zabaleta wanting to take Messi out for fish and chips, Raf. What dinner would help get you in through the doors of a new football club?
I mean, yeah, you know, fish and chips, I thoroughly enjoy fish and chips, first off, Juice. And when I went to the UK, the two times that I've been, you know, I did partake in the fish and chips in various different places, but that's not going to get me to go anywhere. I did find that you guys had a couple really good steakhouses. I think I went to an Aberdeen steakhouse somewhere in London one time. And I don't know. I'm more of a nice kind of steak dinner if I'm going to be in the UK. If I'm going to be, look, it wouldn't take very much if I was to go to like Italy, Spain. You know, I've never been to Spain, Juice. You might be able to tell me more about the cuisine from Spain, the tapas that they all talk about. I've had tapas in the UK from a really cool place that felt very Spanish, but it was, you know, in the middle of the King's Road, and yeah, it seemed a bit awkward. But yeah, I think Italy wouldn't take much, because if I sat down to a meal or two there, I'd be fantastically taken by it, and I would really enjoy a move to Italy if there are any takers out there, Rafa is available for the cheap. You could probably pay him in pasta if you really wanted to. Although I'm not sure how that would benefit my training regimen. Still, maybe we can come up with something. You know, I'm sure we could work something out. Plus, I have a growing daughter. I mean, she'll eat all the pasta too that you can supply her. The German cuisine, you know, I'm not sure Bayern Munich could offer me enough money to go there. You know, it's just, it really have to be a pretty penny juice to try to convince me to go to Bayern Munich at this point. Yeah, that's about all I have to say about Germany. France? Oh, France. I thoroughly enjoy the French cuisine. I've been to Paris. I've been to various places I can't think of right now within France. And I did absolutely enjoy the Parisian food, and I enjoy their lifestyle. I like the idea of taking a couple months off in general, just to kind of go on vacation and holiday and experience the best of life and be a little bit lazy. That's my style, Juice. That's where I am. I want to do that. So, yeah, I mean, it wouldn't take much to win me over with my stomach. I'm pretty open to many options.
It would definitely have to be getting a massive like plate of paella in Spain would do the trick for me. Obviously the tapas is all good, but just a massive plate of paella. I think Germany would do it for me. If somebody put down a 2-pint Stein, a big chunk of like really well done boar meat, and a bowl of sauerkraut next to me, and some mashed potato with garlic, and just said, "Play for us." They'd have had me at the beer, to be honest. You know, let alone anything else afterwards. That'd have been me all done with, all done and dusted. We're gonna leave it there here on World Football Daily on that lighthearted note, Raf. Just before we go, score predictions tonight: City against Barca.
The Uber fan in me says 2-1 Man City for a fantastic finish in Barcelona. I'm going to go with 1-0, though. The analyst inside me says 1-0 Man City.
I'm going 3-0 City.
Ooh. Yeah. Wow.
I don't know what it is. I just love it to be 3-0 to City.
That'd be fantastic.
I want that, City
that
to go through.
That sounds more like the PSG Bayer score.
I'm going to say PSG will get a 2-0 win away from home against Bayern.
Yeah. 3-1 Bayern. Bayern. 3-1 PSG, and the late goal is really just a consolation goal that comes from being a little bit, you know, lax and on their heels some, because they think it's pretty much in the bag already at the end of the first.
Will it be a fantastic night for the French? Will it be a miserable night for the boys from Manchester? We will find out in just a few hours or so as the Champions League gets ready to get back